From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 592, Talking Containers with guest Jessica Dean. Recorded Thursday, May 10th, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Still at Build in Seattle, been having some great conversations, and I have the opportunity to talk to Jessica Dean, who's a cloud developer advocate for Microsoft, focusing on Azure containers, cloud, open source, and of course, DevOps. That's not too broad an area, really. You know, DevOps seems to involve the cloud more and more. Certainly, open source is a normal part of the equation.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, containers is the business these days. Everybody's talking about it. I don't know how many people are actually doing it.
There's quite a few companies actually doing it, especially even when it comes to Kubernetes. I often end up getting asked saying, okay, well, Kubernetes is still in its infancy, right? It was originally started by Google, and it was actually donated to the Cloud Native Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Open source project.
Yep. And as of March of this year, it actually was the first project to have graduated from the CNCF or Cloud Native Foundation.
Cool.
You can go to cncf.com and learn all about the different criteria that it takes to graduate a project. But what's really unique is even though it's still in its infancy, you have companies like USA Today and Spotify and Stack Overflow and GitHub all using Kubernetes as part of their production infrastructure.
But I also think it's super important that Google has a Kubernetes implementation in their cloud.
Absolutely.
Amazon has an implementation, and Azure has an implementation.
And Azure has probably more implementation than people realize.
But didn't Brendan come across? He's works for
Burns.
Brendan Burns was sort of the is he really the dictator for life in the project? Or
well, he co-authored about half of Kubernetes.
Yeah, so he knows a lot about it.
He knows a thing or two.
A couple of things, yeah, here and there.
Yep, but the cool thing is...
And he works for Microsoft.
And he works for Microsoft. And actually, even with Visual Studio Code, which is, of course, open source and cross-platform, he actually wrote the Kubernetes extension for that, co-wrote it. But that also gives you additional functionality to manage your Kubernetes clusters right from Visual Studio Code. You never have to enter into command line. You never have to go into portal. Of course, for certain tasks, I'm sure there would be use cases, but you can actually view your clusters, you can view your config files, you can do a lot of work right from within VS Code.
And of course, Kubernetes also runs on premises, so if you want to run your own.
You can run on-prem. You're not married to only Azure. It's independent. You can do, even if you wanted to do local and still get familiar with it, they have the Miniku project. Docker, actually now, if you're running Docker Edge for both Windows or Mac, you can have Kubernetes running on your system through Docker.
Interesting. So maybe we need to define a few terms, because I don't know that everybody knows why we want Kubernetes, because it's not actually a container.
No, it's a container orchestrator.
Right. And so the container tends to still be Docker?
So the file format that you end up using, first off, actually, let's rewind backwards. Docker itself is an open source runtime. It runs on Mac, Linux, and Windows. Mm-hmm. The Docker file is the format you use to create Docker images that then can be run in container orchestrators.
Right.
You also have the Docker engine that often sits on top of the hardware that then your orchestrator sits on top of. Mm-hmm. So even though Docker and Kubernetes are kind of two different tools, because previously you also had Docker Swarm as another orchestrator option.
That was another orchestrator.
But now everyone's really kind of going to Kubernetes just because of all the additional functionality it gives you.
And just that little burst we did at the beginning was like, this seems to be the one that everybody's doing an implementation
Everyone's really gone all in on. You have Docker that's gone all in. You have Mesosphere for DCOS that's gone all in.
Yes.
Even when it comes down to taking a look at all the DevOps tools that we have, aside from VSTS or Visual Studio Team Services being Microsoft's option, you have Codefresh, you have CodeShip that just got acquired by CloudBees, which also has Jenkins, and then you have JenkinsX. All these tools are making sure that their CI/CD process, from a DevOps perspective, is streamlined for deploying into a Kubernetes environment.
Right.
If you scale that back even more and you take a look at the 50,000-foot view in the sky from Kubernetes and Azure, aside from just having Azure Kubernetes Service, mm-hmm. which is your Kubernetes cluster, but managed by Azure.
Right.
You also have Azure Container Service, which would be an unmanaged instance of Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. You're responsible for the control plane. Then you also have Azure Container Instances, which is still backed by Kubernetes. You don't get access to the cluster.
You don't need to know.
You don't need to know anything, but you can still run that Dockerfile, that image from a private container registry. You can still run that over in Azure Container Instances.
And I see why you want that Docker image, because it doesn't matter which way that you go to deploy.
I can use it anywhere.
It's going to work.
I can use it local on my system in Minikube. I can use it over in AWS.
Right.
The awesome thing also about Kubernetes is you can use it in a private environment, mm-hmm. a public environment, a hybrid environment, or even a multi-cloud environment.
Sure.
I can run Kubernetes and connect my clusters up across Microsoft, across Amazon, across Google.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And you know, I realize, and I take notes as we go to make sure I get all the links for all these different things. It's just a host of products. Like, no wonder folks are intimidated.
It can be very intimidating, very overwhelming. Microsoft, what I really love is that we're really passionate about trying to make this as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm. While still giving a substantial range of choice.
Absolutely. You still have a substantial range of choice, and it still doesn't limit any kind of functionality. So one of the questions I get asked is, okay, so Microsoft supports Kubernetes and you can set up a Kubernetes cluster, but is that a Microsoft version of Kubernetes?
Right.
It's not.
No.
It is 100% upstream. For anyone that might be of the Windows mindset and doesn't necessarily understand what the word upstream is, it means there are no forks.
Right.
This is direct Kubernetes mainstream
Kubernetes.io.
Yep, Kubernetes.io. This is the same thing that the community is collaborating on.
Nice.
It's 100% open APIs. And so it's really, really powerful being able to, okay, I have access to the complete full bulk of Kubernetes. But then you want to still make that a more simple experience,
sure.
right?
But I think this is my experience working with Linux folks, and especially on the IT side, is like they like all the knobs, switches, and dials. Like
Absolutely.
They want to be able to tweak and tune everything themselves. And folks living in the Windows space and in the Microsoft space more are like, hey, you know, the defaults, like get me in there quickly. I'll tune later if I think it's necessary, but I don't necessarily want all those adjustments.
Yep. So one of the announcements we made at Build on Monday was the introduction of the DevOps project with AKS support.
Okay.
So the DevOps project
AKS
has been around.
AKS being Azure Kubernetes Service.
Yeah. So DevOps project has been around. It's still technically in preview, but we now introduced additional support for AKS. So let's say that, especially for the Windows developer listening mm-hmm. or the IT pro, you still want to empower your developers to be able to have access to this, mm-hmm. but you don't know really where to begin. How do I spin up a Kubernetes cluster and an Azure Container Registry and a CI/CD pipeline, and I don't have a VSTS account? Where
right.
do I even start? That's overwhelming. So the benefit of the DevOps project is right from the Azure portal, you click the little plus sign in the top left, it pops up with, here's everything that's popular. DevOps project is right one of the first options.
Right.
You can select it, you choose .NET as your language, you can also do Node, you can do Java, you can do Python, you can choose Go.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now for AKS support, there's a limited language support, but
right.
we're growing. But I know for sure if you do .NET, you can then choose your framework, select .NET Core. The very next question is, where do you want to deploy your app? And the very first option is AKS.
Mm-hmm.
You can also do web app for containers for Windows and for Linux.
Right.
You can do virtual machine. You still have access to your IaaS. You can get as big or robust as you want, but AKS is now an option. So when you select that, it creates your cluster for you. It creates your container registry for you. It creates your pipeline for you.
Mm-hmm.
It even gives you a sample code repo set up complete with the .NET Core sample app. So because VSTS also has a private Git repository that they give for free, you can pull that code out of it, pop your own .NET Core code in. Now you already have the pipeline, you have everything already set up.
And the challenge here when you get all these moving pieces is this, am I doing this right? Did I get myself into a back corner unnecessarily? So you're giving me an example to walk through each of those parts.
Not only an example, it sets you up at least to get within to your dev environment. So I know for people that might be a little bit more advanced with Kubernetes, there has been requests for, okay, that's great for dev, but how can I get more multi-environment stages? I'm personally working on that. I'm working close with the team.
Mm-hmm.
But this gets, for anybody who's new, who's looking at it, it gets you stable and ready with the best practices. So for example, there's a host of also open source release automation tools for
right.
Kubernetes. Two of the big ones that I actually did a session on at Build is Draft and Helm.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them will streamline both the developer experience and the IT pro operations experience to be able to both simplify the developer's coding workload from a local system all the way up into a Git repository, and then ultimately from the operations perspective, being able to define your load balancers, your networking, your ingress controllers, you can really take that DevOps definition and encapsulate it.
Nice.
So you really do have that collaboration. There's no wall. And the best part is that tool, one of the tools I mentioned with Helm, that uses Helm charts. It's essentially a giant package for your infrastructure, for your app, for everything. Mm-hmm. The DevOps project with AKS automatically uses that tool, and it actually, VSTS actually has support for Helm, so it'll package up your little app. You don't even have to know how to create a chart, how to create a package. It does it for you, gives you the best practices. Then from the Windows side, you can go in there and say, okay, now I can learn how to do this. I don't need to know the knobs and dials, but I can learn so that I can set myself up for success.
So it's not hiding anything. It's generating the scripts that do creation process.
Everything for you.
Right. So you can just go through, and if you want to tinker with it, you can tinker with it.
Absolutely. And it's all open source too. So if you find something that you think would make it better, mm-hmm. by all means, submit a pull request.
Sure. If you get to that place where you're comfortable making a contribution, certainly they want your contributions.
We absolutely do.
So do you see this tool as something aimed at a dev to get their pipeline working, get the app deployed, but done in a way that IT won't be furious with them?
Yes. So that was actually the exact session that I gave on Monday. It's called Best Practices for Kubernetes and Azure. Mm-hmm. And I partnered with Abel Wang, who's another CDA on my team. And so his background is primary, as he would call it, old as dirt Windows developer. That's all he wants to do is sling code. When he winds down, he's slinging code. That's all he wants to do. But my background is IT and operations.
Right.
So I can take a look at a C# application and I'm going to be confused. Mm-hmm, I'm not going to know what to start. If you give me, my career spans so much to where even with you have your dev server and your QA server and your prod server, and somebody as the developer hands me a zip file and I RDP or SCP over to whatever system. I get it running in these environments and it hits prod and it breaks.
Yep.
So then I'm going back to dev and we're trying, like, we can't troubleshoot it, right? There's always this language barrier. There's this environments don't align. It's hard to streamline that process. So all these tools simplify my experience and Abel's experience, regardless of what side of the line you fall on, right? And the way it works is, so using Draft and Helm, I can use those tools locally. Using Docker Edge that I mentioned earlier, with being able to have a Kubernetes cluster local on my system, I can set that up for my dev. And I actually wrote scripts that'll simplify that for the Windows environment. So they're PowerShell scripts and even WSL or Windows Subsystem for Linux scripts that'll set up your Windows system with these tools so that your developer can do what they do best. Mm-hmm. Then they can check in their code to the repo and you can set all this up. You can set it up to where it's just local. They don't have access to a public container registry, or you can set it up with access to Azure Container Registry or a Docker registry or Quay, whatever.
Right.
You set it up. Then when they check in their code and it pushes, not only are they debugging locally with the Helm charts, with the infrastructure, with the ingress controllers.
So the dev has all that view into what's going on their local instance.
On their local instance, but they don't know about it.
Right.
So they don't necessarily know that they're able to debug their app. They're able to do all this locally. And so by the time they check it in and it gets into your version control and your source control and your pipeline, you as the IT don't have to worry about, well, is this going to work with my infrastructure? Do I have to rewrite their application so that I can tie in the load balancer, my ingress controller, or the SSL certificate I have to go and issue?
Right.
It simplifies all this, the things that we as IT used to have to go do manually.
Yeah, add to the process.
Especially like even when I think about having to go get an SSL certificate for a web application before. I mean, I have to go over, I have to register it, I have to submit a ticket and wait a week.
Yep.
Now using Helm charts, there's different projects like KubeLego, which is designed for Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. So it's a container, a pod that sits in a Kubernetes cluster.
Right.
And it will actually issue an SSL certificate for anything that hits my ingress controller, which also is set up from a Helm chart.
Nice.
So anytime I take my app that my developer gives and I have a little ingress notation annotation set up, it's going to reroute back to the ingress controller that's going to communicate to the pod that's going to pull an SSL certificate from Let's Encrypt without me having to do anything.
And if this is an update to the app and you've already got a cert, it just says, oh, we already have that cert.
And you can even log into the pod and see, okay, no, I don't need to pull another cert. It already exists and it's already SSL backed and you have TLS everything.
Right.
And so on Monday when I was giving the session, I have a blog post that went live that walked you through it. It even gives you the sample code. Mm-hmm. And I work closely with the AKS team and the Helm team and Lockie Evanson, who actually has written quite a bit. He used to work for Deus, which Deus is the company that created Helm. Mm-hmm. Microsoft bought them a little over a year ago, but he actually was the one that kind of showed me and introduced me to a bunch of like the Ingress and SSL certificate stuff. So when I made the blog post public, he actually commented, he said, by the way, a week ago, we now announced HTTP routing with AKS in Azure. So you don't even have to do that extra step. Now you can do it all from Azure.
Wow.
So there will be a follow-up blog post. I've been on the road. Build has been crazy.
Yes.
But within the next week or two, there will be a follow-up blog post where I actually walk through. I know a lot of that code was due in part to Jess Frizzell, which is awesome because she's a big name in Linux and open source and also the Kubernetes container orchestration world. But she is also a CDA and works for Microsoft.
Nice. Yes, she is. And I've seen her tweets as well. I haven't had her on the show yet, though, but that's another goal of mine, actually. Yep. It's just interesting to see that mixture because a lot of this tech did come from the Linux world.
Correct.
That Windows is also kind of, you know, with stuff like WSL, which we just did a show on. Mm-hmm. That you're coming, that Windows is meeting you sort of halfway. You know, the best way to do this is with a set of apt commands or, you know, grepping and so forth. Well, don't rewrite them into PowerShell.
Yeah.
Just run them.
Just run them. And you can run them. And now you even have interoperability between WSL and your Windows platform with PowerShell. So I can still go back and forth between Bash and PowerShell.
Right.
And I want to be explicit, even when I say Bash, because I do sessions also on WSL and how to do Linux tooling on Windows. It's not just Bash.
Right.
You can run ZSH. You can do Fish. You can do all the old school Linux things that you're used to. In fact, one of perhaps my largest GitHub projects that went viral last year on Reddit was earlier in the year, I had something that was called Badass Terminal on Mac.
Right.
And I use Power Level 9K. I use OhMyZSH. I use I use Pathogen or Vundl. I have the option for both now in my script. I recommend using one or the other. But all these really famous open source tools that makes your terminal look really powerful. And it's the ultimate experience for IT or dev.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked on Mac. And so in November of last year, I wanted to see if I could take that and make it work on WSL.
Right.
Or Bash on Windows on Ubuntu. Now it's obviously been renamed. But I wanted to see, okay, can I take something that's working on a standard NIC system, make it work the exact same on Linux and WSL? And the cool thing is, actually, the same script that I have that sets it all up, fun fact, I was able to do it about 90% of the way. But the same script that I use that sets it up on WSL is the exact same script somebody on Linux runs. It's identical. I did not rewrite the script.
That's cool, which means you don't have to own it, right? If somebody else is maintaining that script, it's one less thing you need to worry about. You just get to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful stuff. Jessica, give me one moment for this very important message.
Containers are awesome for servers, but you've got hundreds or thousands of desktops to manage. Then what's the best way to manage your Windows clients? With group policy and mobile device management, of course, and the added superpowers of Policy Pack. Configure and lock down settings for browsers in Java, elevate standard user rights when needed, and manage the heck out of Windows 10 file associations and the start menu. If you haven't looked at Policy Pack, and you have more than 20 domain-joined or non-domain-joined machines, then you're missing out. Check out Policy Pack at policypack.com for real-world problem-solving demos, plus a way for you to try it out yourself. Policy Pack Software, securing your standards.
And we're back. Richard Campbell here at Build. It's Run As Radio talking to Jessica Dean about the container world now available in Azure and with Windows Stack. Lots of interesting tools around all of this. It does take some time to start thinking in terms of these containers that I think come and go much more freely.
Yeah.
We've gotten good automation around generating VMs, but you're still more likely to update a VM. You just don't update a container. You replace it.
You replace it, you would update maybe the Docker image file and
sure.
You update the so before I comment, actually, to dive deep into that, let's first make sure that for anybody who's still new to containers, who's mm-hmm. trying to understand it, let's talk about that. So we keep talking about VMs, obviously old school IT. We know virtual machines as hardware virtualization.
Yep.
A container essentially is operating system virtualization.
Right.
For the most part. But here's something even more, and sometimes I blow people's minds when I say it. A container is not a real thing. It's not a real thing.
It's official. Your work isn't real anymore.
Yep. Nope. This is not what you see.
It's not what you think it is.
It's essentially process isolation that's based on Linux kernel features.
Right.
So you have things like namespaces and C groups. You have things that a process can use versus what a process can see.
Right.
And so when you're ultimately taking this Docker file and this Docker, which is ultimately going to create a Docker image, you're essentially creating an encapsulated runtime environment
mm-hmm.
with all these different layers that your application, ultimately your app dependencies, are bundled into this container. So I can break down the dependencies, I can add to it, I can change it, rebuild that image, and update, do rolling updates with container orchestrator tools that will allow me to do in-place changes of my application with all the dependencies also bundled in mm-hmm. without having to worry about the virtual machine or computer it's running on.
Right.
So that's really the benefit of it.
I also think that this whole, you know, built with configuration as code in mind from the very beginning.
Yep.
So there's no magic UIs. There's no secret keys. Everything that's in that is a text file. You can read it. You can repeat it. Yep. It's all executable.
And the nice thing is, so it's especially when you're dealing with Kubernetes. Let's talk about Kubernetes deployments and as you're going to stand up a pod or an mm-hmm. image. And even if you're new to, so first off, the deployment YAML, the deployment file would use the YAML format.
Right.
And if you're still new from the IT pro side of things and you don't know how to write YAML, you can actually use for Kubernetes, the command line interface to talk to the cluster is called kubectl or kubectl, however your pronunciation is. But you can use that in conjunction with the run command and then specify your image, specify the port of the application, and that'll actually write your YAML file.
Hmm.
So you can then go into your dashboard in Kubernetes, which we, again, you would still use local command line tools to connect to, but you can actually see how that deployment file works. So once you start getting comfortable with the structure in YAML, it's all very native. It's mm-hmm. you can see, okay, here's the image line, here's the connection information, here's my ingress and my load balancer. And then you would have services that are the same. You have load balancer or cluster IP, which was internal only. All these things start making a little bit more sense.
Mm-hmm.
But then here's where you can actually simplify it even more. And that was the tool Helm that I mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Helm actually takes it, templatizes it, parameterizes it. So now you take all those things that reference back just to one file. I make the changes in one file and it automatically is pulled out into all the other deployment services, ingress, anything else.
Wow.
It's taken just from one file.
That's cool.
So it really is, I guess, kind of simplified and granular where you say it's like a text file. The purpose of Helm was to remove any kind of or it was to ultimately kind of create things more like a package manager for Kubernetes.
Right.
But to get rid of indent errors and to remove the whole tabs or spaces kind of argument.
Wow, we're still fighting over that, huh?
We're still fighting over tabs or spaces.
Man, oh man, oh man. Well, at least it's not zero or one based.
Fun fact, I actually have zero and one tattooed on me.
Oh, somewhere.
It's on my arms.
Okay.
And then I also have CSS code.
Yeah, you got long sleeves on. So.
I do have long sleeves on right now.
Yeah, so we're not going to be able
to. And then I realized I don't even have to show it anyway because this is a podcast.
It's a podcast. Nobody's looking. That's only me here. That's all there is. How do you know, once you're into the Kubernetes side and you've got this management, this is giving me instrumentation. It's showing me how many containers I've got, how much load they're under. Like, how do I know when to scale that up, scale it back down? What do those consoles look like?
So the nice thing is so when you are using, I want to be careful the way that I kind of talk about the Kubernetes, depending on the configuration.
Sure.
So when you are using it in a cloud platform, you do have the Kubernetes dashboard installed. If you are using Minikube, I believe you also get the dashboard installed. Docker Edge right now with Kubernetes, mm-hmm. you would have to install the Kubernetes dashboard separately. But it's an open source GitHub project. It's very easy to go ahead and configure.
Right.
And I'm working on, again, like taking that experience as far as manually having to configure things and simplifying it. But you have a dashboard built right into Kubernetes. So
right.
you can see the CPU usage. You can see your memory usage. You can also have the containers easily scale up and down.
Right.
You can also scale your clusters up and down with one command when it's in a managed environment. The other benefit is that actually we just announced at Build this on Monday, I believe,
mm-hmm.
is now you have the addition of health monitoring right from the Azure portal.
Nice.
So you can go in, you can see the node health, you can add more nodes, you can scale up and down right from the portal without having to do anything from command line.
Right.
You can also see the health of your pods of, you're given a lot of really rich telemetry.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, more so is you can think of, so the AKS DevOps project I mentioned earlier, if you want really rich telemetry for your application, like application insights,
mm-hmm.
the AKS DevOps project actually even sets up application insights, how you can write that back over into your
and
Kubernetes
that's
cluster.
What I was thinking is like, I want app insights running in there anyway, especially if it's a .NET app where it
yep.
gives us an awful lot of information.
Absolutely.
But it ties in with the Kubernetes instance
yep.
as well.
And so if you want to learn how to get that set up, the AKS DevOps project will do it for you, complete
right.
with the instrumentation key. And so you can then use that for any future app and you can kind of learn from the best practices.
And so what are the metrics? What am I looking for to say this cluster needs to scale up?
So first off, you want to kind of see like if your CPU usage, again, is probably above 80%. You
right.
probably want to start planning. And you can set automatically if based on, so one of the nice things also about Kubernetes is it has what's called elastic bursting.
Right.
So based on hardware usage and based on CPU consumption, you can actually take, okay, this Kubernetes cluster is running in a private cloud, but now CPU usage is getting really high,
right?
Burst into the public cloud for CPU demand, and then it can scale back down.
Yeah, the same way you might flip to a CDN at high load times.
Yep.
To offload work from your web server.
So it's very granular. You can configure a lot of that. You can, I mean, ultimately all this stuff is configured by YAML files, right? It's all ultimately scripting on some level.
Right.
So the nice thing is for the IT pro, as we start getting a little bit more comfortable with writing code, and I know it's not native for us.
It's happening though.
It's happening. We're all kind of becoming developers.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I had an imposter syndrome issue where I kept saying, I'm not a developer.
Yeah,
I'm not a developer.
I don't write code.
Nope.
I'm not writing code.
Multiple people would come over and they're like, you do realize that you have a GitHub with like 60 repos and all this infrastructure is code and people are forking and starring. They're like, you're a developer.
Pretty sure you're not writing code there? Pretty sure.
So it's, but as much as we try to resist it, like it's happening. We're getting turned into that
direction.
And it
is different kinds of code. I mean, just recognizing that there are species of coding that we're doing here. I think the big cultural change has been this recognition that for a long time, the code that we wrote was only used by us. They were on our 3.5-inch floppies, really old, or on your USB key.
Yeah.
And that was fine because you could really not have to talk about it. But more and more, you're sharing that code with your fellow operations folks. And so now source control becomes important. There's much a higher quality bar. You want to do better input validation because you want somebody else using it to not blow things up by accident.
Absolutely.
You know?
And I want to make it more repeatable. So I don't want to have things hard-coded. I need to start using variables and parameters and things that I can swap in and out based on environment.
Yeah.
So, and you're having to start think a little bit more like a developer. But going back to kind of like the metrics and logging and resource consumption usage, I can script my deployments and my cluster accordingly to do what I needed to do based on demand.
Right.
And then it's also even more valuable since I do work on a DevOps team when, and I always have to quote the definition of DevOps, especially from my boss, Donovan Brown.
I
wholeheartedly believe in his definition. That DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to our end users. So how do we know we're delivering value unless we have this telemetry,
unless
we have this data and this metrics?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Waiting for people to complain, not a good system to figure out if you're developing
value. That's reactive, right? We're not proactive. Now we're going back to the IT world where we're getting woken up at 3 a.m. because the CEO can't watch cat videos.
Yeah.
Whatever you're getting the phone call of.
Yeah, no, you should know
for anyone I've worked for, that never happened.
Cat videos never break. There's always an infinite supply of cat videos.
Exactly.
The rest of the internet may be down, but there are still cat videos.
So funny, actually, when Docker was still kind of coming around, most of the Docker evangelists I would work with and I'd come across, the demo they would always show is how to spin up a website. And every time you reload it, it shows a new cat GIF. Super silly. But it's funny because then it becomes iconic, right?
Yeah.
People start to recognize these
things. Yeah. You see the cat GIF, you know everything's working.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Keep moving forward. Is it really CPU that tends to be the constraining resource?
CPU and memory probably would be the two.
Because it used to be network was always the problem. That the thin pipe was the issue.
Well, if you go back, it would depend on where you're running, again, your Kubernetes cluster. If you're doing in your own private data center, you could also base that on your network usage.
Yep.
I'm thinking of Azure where, I mean, pretty much Azure is your computer.
Yeah.
So you can scale up, you can do geo-replication, you can... I guess I'm a little bit spoiled because I have Azure subscriptions and I get to play with all these really cool demos.
You work for Azure, therefore Azure.
Yes. So, fun fact that you actually talked about, I work for Azure. I was in Paris back in March because I was speaking at Tech Summit Paris. And I was having breakfast at this little cafe and I got really excited because my French is abysmal. And I noticed the mother and daughter next to me actually spoke English. So I leaned over and I started exchanging conversation. I asked where they were from. They said they're from Florida and they're from the United States. They're here on vacation. And they asked where I was doing. And so I said, oh, I work for Microsoft. I travel and I speak. And they're like, do you know where the cloud is? And I started laughing. I was like, I do know where the cloud is. Actually, I talk about that. Our cloud is Azure. And they're like, nope, that's not right. And I kind of looked at them. They're like, we're going to tell everybody that we met the cloud and the cloud's name is Jessica. So I started cracking up. But it's funny because people do say, like, you work for the cloud. You get to do all this stuff. But so I feel like I'm a little spoiled when it does come down to networking. But networking, of course, especially in bandwidth and consumption, making sure that bandwidth is accessible. But especially, I guess, on a on a container orchestrator, you would also look at things like CPU and memory.
Sure.
Because you can also do hardware isolation down into your container now with Kubernetes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I can say, I want my container to have this much access of CPU and to have this much memory usage, and I can make it very, very granular.
Right. And you can tweak and tune that. So I mean, it starts with implementation to see what's going on, and then gets into, you know, how much of each thing you need, where do you actually feel the constraint. I also appreciate that the containers tend to be more single purpose. They're very pro microservice, which I look at it more than anything as just making seamless updates.
Yep.
That we're not taking down the monolith that is the service. We're creating new instances of new versions of pieces of that and just standing them into the cluster.
Yep.
And the old ones go away as they finish up.
And you're doing it also based on demand. One of the projects that I think of that for anybody who's new and wants to get started and who's listening mm-hmm. is, I mentioned Helm charts earlier. There is I believe there's a blog post of how to also get started with, let's say, Jenkins. So anybody who's familiar with setting up a Jenkins CI/CD server from scratch on a virtual machine, it's quite a long process. You're right. Having to set up the framework. You're having to set up plugins. You're having to register everything. It's very robust. Well, they have a Helm chart for a Jenkins where you can set up a Jenkins instance on your Kubernetes cluster. And when you set that up and run that, I mean, you literally do it with just a values file. It's a one command thing. You fill in your CPU usage, your memory usage, your even down to your ingress host name, all that fun stuff.
Right.
Once it spins up, you now have a Jenkins CI/CD server that's going to now build your images and do whatever you need it to do.
Nice.
But to do that, it's actually going to spin up a Jenkins slave in another pod, but it's not doing that as a deployment. It's doing it as what's called a job. And so what it's going to do is it's going to do its one task where it mm-hmm. builds its image, it pushes its image, and then that pod dies.
Right.
So it spins it up as a job, does what it needs to do, and then does back down. So it's able to scale based on demand and for the task.
And you literally task by task because the containers spin fast.
Absolutely.
And they're low cost. So why not just make them for the thing you're doing and make them go away?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's a part of the challenge that we're really thinking about. Virtual machines still went to great lengths to act like they were still computers.
Yes.
And containers just haven't gone that way. They're not real.
It's not a virtual machine.
Somebody said to me, they're just not real.
It's not, nope. And that's how that person sounds like. She was very wise.
Sounds wise, yeah. It's a good way to think about it. So much of this seems very Buddhist these days.
Yeah, and it's almost like there's this very peaceful state because I don't have to worry about my virtual machine crashing or all of a sudden this app going into production isn't going to work because you promised me that the version of Java on prod matched QA and nope, somebody updated it. So yeah, it's a lot more stress-free. I can breathe. It's fun.
I like that the files that we're making are the files that actually execute. So there's no Word doc. There's no false version of the truth.
Yep.
Jessica, so much fun to talk to you. What's next for you? Build is ending.
So Build is ending. I fly back tonight, actually. I will be speaking. So I think I mentioned earlier, Lockie Evanson, who worked on the Helm team. Him and I are doing a session tomorrow night over in the East Bay. I'm from California, so we'll be doing a session then. Friday, I am catching up on meetings because I've been at Build. Friday night, I'm actually flying out over to DC on personal time. My girlfriend's doing a big accomplishment thing, and she's riding a bike for 300 miles.
Wow, cool.
Yep, so I'll go meet her Saturday morning, take a few days off Monday, Tuesday next week, and then I'm back on the road up in Napa at JFrog Swamp Up.
And telling the story.
Telling the story. The following week, I'm going to be hosting the open source show in San Francisco.
Awesome.
If anybody wants to see where I'm traveling and speaking, they can also go to, I work for Donovan Brown's team, as I mentioned, the League of Extraordinary Cloud DevOps Advocates.
I've seen that site.
So you can go to loecda.com and click on talks, and you can see where any member of the league is speaking at any given time. We regularly update it.
Jessica Dean, thanks for coming on Run As Radio.
Thank you very much for having me, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.